Welcome to the Sound Effect Podcast, the podcast about sound effects. My name is Asbjørn Andersen, and I'm the founder of asoundeffect.com. In this episode, Jennifer Walden has an excellent interview ready for you featuring the sound team for the massively popular movie Everything Everywhere All at Once. In the interview, they talk about creating the sound of everybody's favorite hot dog hands, making the everything bagel, and bridging the different universes through sound. They break down recording the fanny pack scene, recording ADR for the martial arts team, and capturing the sound of Rack Cooney. They talk about mixing in Atmos, and they even have a special guest appearance by Noel Walden. Before we begin, two quick things that might interest you. The first one is that we've kicked off a huge sound design contest at asoundeffect.com/contest with excellent prizes from Mattia Gelotto. It ends May 21st, 2022, so if you're feeling creative, hop on over to asoundeffect.com/contest and enter while you have the chance. Also, if you want to get your hands on 1,000 premium sound effects, we've got a special opportunity for you. You can either buy Smart Sound Effects Starter Pack at 90% off, with proceeds being sent to the Red Cross in support of Ukraine, or download it for free with attribution. To get the pack, visit asoundeffect.com/free. Okay, time for the interview. Jennifer, please take it away.
Hey, this is Jennifer Walden for Sound Effect. Today, we're going to talk about the sound of Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And joining me are supervising sound editor Brent Kaiser. Hey, Brent.
Oh, hi.
And Andrew Twite, the sound designer. Hey there, Andrew.
Hello.
We also have Julie Diaz, the ADR supervisor. Hey, Julie.
Hey.
And last but not least is the re-recording mixer, Alexandra Fairman. Hey there, Alex.
Hi. Happy to be here.
Thank you guys so much for doing this. I'm so glad to be talking about this film. It's like a mind-altering experience that didn't require ingesting any hallucinogenics. Everything about this film is just so crazy, from the story concepts to the color and lighting to my favorite part, the sound. This film is just a singular experience. When you guys started talking about this film with the Daniels, how did they describe this to you? And what were some of their initial ideas for what it should sound like?
After Swiss Army Man, this started becoming a thing. And in social situations, I would be updated from Dan Kwan, Dan Shiner, that, oh, this fun thing, this is kind of this is kind of that. And then about 2018, 2019, the producer Jonathan Wong was like, hey, we have a script. We're about to go shoot. Do you want to see it? And I'm like, yes, I would love to see the script. Will I understand it?
I can only imagine.
Because the hard thing about reading these scripts are they're so amazing and you're laughing, but you're just like, I don't know how this is going to work. And so that started the conversations there. But, and then I would start seeing stuff coming in from shoots like the dailies, because Paul Rogers, who's also on the same floor as us at Unbridled, Parallax Post, were getting the dailies. He was editing the second they were coming through. So he's putting an assembly cut together. And so I'm able to see these things. And he started putting it in our ears like, all right, start getting weird. There's this hallway scene. It's a lot going on. And that was kind of the first scene that we saw, and they kind of tossed it to us and was like, hey, we have this hallway scene. We don't really know what works. We need to feel different universes coming through, or different verses coming through and breaking through, and everything's breaking down. Yeah, go. And we're like, well, what do you mean? Like, what would you think for this? And go. Oh, okay, cool. And then that's when it got shot over to Andrew Twite, and same thing. He was like, so what do you want me to do? I'm like, go.
It was pretty great. And that scene in particular, man, like, we cut it, and a lot of what we originally cut stuck. I mean, like, that is one of the few scenes where, like, a lot of what we cut stuck, like, the cartoony stuff. Like, we didn't adapt the hallway movement until a little later, but it was like the first time we got a sense of like how the radio elements played, like when you feel Jobu coming up that elevator and everything. But like, we were blessed with a lot of timing lock on this film, and that scene in particular is an indication of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fortunate, actually, that there was picture lock, because Jobu does a lot of verse jumping in that scene. And there's a lot of verse jumping happening throughout the film. It's an integral part of the story. So, you know, if that was changing all the time, it would have been even more challenging for you as a sound team. So let's talk about the sound of verse jumping. There are kind of several elements at play here. There's the tech sounds, the physical sound of their bodies sometimes moving through space and time, especially in the beginning. They also do that head snap thing when they acquire a new skill. Oh. So yeah, what went into that?
One of my favorite stories on this one is they hit us up and they're like, hey, we need help with the green light on the Bluetooth and the red light. And so Andrew and I put a bunch of stuff together. Andrew really went to town on like making like 20 something options, because he's like, I don't know what they want, but here, because they were like, just give us options. And so like 2 weeks goes by and I see Paul and I'm like, hey Paul, like, did you like them? Any thoughts, anything like that? He goes, oh no, they were great. I was like, oh wonderful, which one of the 20 or so did you pick? He goes, we picked all of them. And I'm like, what? He's like, no, we just put them all on top of each other and it works. And you're just like, oh cool.
Nice. Did you flatten that sound down to carry it through the session, or what, did you leave it 20 tracks wide?
Later it ended up later it ended up getting really stripped down, but that was kind of the back and forth that we would get, is like, oh, did you put everything on it? Yeah. All right, we're keeping everything. Oh, no, don't do that, don't do that.
Because, I mean, those sounds in particular, it was our chance to kind of, it was our discovery, which, you know, we had some time for discovery, but not a ton. And these were things where it's like, okay, why don't we think about what's actually happening here? And it's like, so we went really out there. It's like, okay, we're bending space and time. Like, this is a very sci-fi heavy sound and all this stuff. And ultimately, it was just like, you know, this movie isn't necessarily about the tech.
Yeah.
You know, the tech is something that they use to achieve these bigger concepts that we're actually dealing with and witnessing happen. And so, like, really the tech ended up becoming a much more simplified thing. And also, like, all their tech is pretty basic. Like, so, like, we played around with a ton of, like, really basic Casio sounds, right, Brent?
Like, oh yeah, shout out to Reese Richardson for getting weird on a Casio for us.
Yeah, and so like we kind of went back, like that one thing that they had said at one point is like, you know, 90s Windows.
Oh, yeah, we're that like, totally makes sense.
And we're like, okay. Yeah,
Windows 95.
And so like as far and as extreme we went with these really polished sci-fi sounds, like, they didn't necessarily work. And also for how quickly things happen on screen, you don't really have time for a huge build. So we found that those simple charges and the simple beeps, like, you know, they're recognizable, they're fast, and then the story can be told.
Right. Like one of the things is like when you're jumping through the universes and you're following on the phone, the little beeps are just plain little beeps, but they're also able to tell the story because they're musical in a way. You hear them going up in scale. So it's a boop, 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 boop. And so it's like just that little bit of musicality tells a whole story versus just, you know,
blah. And those in-screen moments are great because they're really playful sounds. They're almost cartoony. And, you know, like I think the Daniels were kind of drawn to that. And I, you know, that's something that they had kind of laid out for us, whether in conversation or in their AAF. Like, so we were like, we had a good guide in them, without a doubt.
Yeah.
There was some fun, like, for that rubber bandy sound when it goes around, when it finally selects the universe. That was a really fun sound too, I remember.
And that was like one of the last VFX shots we got.
Yeah.
Like, he had been, like, Quan had been telling us for a long time, he's like, so it's going to be like a rubber band. And I'm like, I really need to see this. Like, because it was just this temp thing for the longest time. And when we saw it, it's like, oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah. Shout out to Zach Stoltz and his visual effects team, because there was only 8 of them for this whole movie.
That's incredible.
Incredible. So, but also big shout out to Alex, because we're sitting here talking about all these crazy things we're doing and like all of these tracks. And then she walks on and we're just like, oh, hi, here's like over 300 and some odd tracks. We're sorry.
Like, have fun. The amount of banking she had to do, like up and down through those sessions, I was like, oh, you have so much patience.
I tried to open the set. I mean, I opened the sessions ahead of the mix, and I was going through them to try to like memorize and familiarize myself with where everything was. And I decided, well, I just have to hit the ground running.
Yeah, it was the first day she's like, so what sub groups are what? And I was like, oh, and I was like writing out a cheat sheet. I just reminded me of the old days at Dane Tracks having to make like, what are those things called? Top sheets, yeah. When you used to have to make them for the mixers. And I was like, oh man, that would have been helpful for this one.
Well, and I had before we even got into Prime Editorial, like I had created the template and I laid out like FXA, this is where more of like the Foley support will live, B, whooshes, C, punches, like, and that kind of thing. So we definitely, there was a method to all that madness for sure.
Yeah. Thank God for, Andrew Twite's anal retentive way of doing these things. We got a mandate email with a PDF because we had, shout out to Casey Riley and Jacob Young Thor Flack, helped out with some of the effects, additional sound effects editing, and it was basically like, don't stray out of this, do not leave this.
And it, like we have to have this because we have a finite amount of time, and we were at that time we didn't know who our mixer was going to be, and we needed to be certain of where everything was so we could point them just like we really just didn't have much room for error once we were getting into the end game. So, and like, so my backup redundancy at the end of every day of editorial was insane. I had like three drives to make sure we didn't lose anything. And you know,
sorry, we're on a tangent.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, my bad.
No, it's good. So despite the fact that you handed Alex a session with over 300 tracks in it, it wasn't like an everything bagel. Like everything just wasn't all over the place.
may have felt like it, right, Alex? Well,
salt.
It was an everything bagel, but only because there was literally everything going on. We had natural backgrounds, and then we had, you know, all the sci-fi stuff and the fight sequences. It just was a lot.
And then Foley, shout out to JRS.
John Sievert.
Foley, John Sievert up in Canada. Like, those dudes killed it.
Yeah.
Those dudes did such a great job on Foley, which you cannot book them because they are ours. Sorry.
It's an unbridled exclusive.
Yeah.
We will fight. Yeah. But what was very apparent when I opened the session was how much work had gone into it already by the time I opened it.
Yeah, because, well, to speak on that, like, timeline, you know, from picture edit, you know, we live in a weird place being an indie sound house. You know, we're not in the bigger studios. We're not this big, huge, like union thing. Like, we're definitely union. We definitely are pro union. We just are never on these like 40-day mixes that you get for like Venom and things like this. You know,
this was not a Marvel movie approach.
Yeah. So
it just wasn't.
Yeah.
We got 7 weeks of editorial going into this
initially, right?
Yeah. And then we had like, I think like 13 or 15 days set for mix. And once we got done with the 7 weeks, because it just took 7 weeks before the guys even really saw anything, just to get this thing whipped into shape. And then...
And that took every second of that time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were like long hours doing all this fun stuff. I mean, that's why we brought in additional help and all these things. And so just to get our first presentation to them, and then we showed it to them, and realized like, oh, right, we're in a different ballpark than most studio films because we have directors that are also extremely talented sound designers, extremely talented picture editors. You know, before this, I mean, and even on this, they did a lot of the visual effects themselves. I think Scheinert did all of the closed captioning. You know,
Shiner was doing the credits on stage.
Yeah.
Like, what?
You know, and I think on Swissy, he was doing all like the dead body, like stopping the breathing stuff on comping for Swiss Army Man while we were in mix. So, I mean, like, these guys are so accomplished. So it's us just going in and doing these things. It's no. What it really is a collaboration, which I think is very unique in our situation, or Unbridled does this a lot with our collaboration and things like this. So talked to the Post Soup, talked to the producers, and was like, hey, if we take 2 days off the mix, this is how much money it cost. Can I give that to Andrew and we just go for an additional month with the guys in studio and we just go through the whole movie? And that's what we did. And if that wouldn't have happened, like literally we were pulling two shifts. Andrew was sitting in with Quan. I was sitting in with Scheinert. And then Quan would come in additionally at night and sit with another re-recording mixer, Ian Chase, to like try to make it all work. And it was literally, that's how we even were able to prep and get it ready to show to Alex and being like, please don't kill us.
Oh, and I have to mention the only way all of that would have worked, and the only like the one of the biggest gifts we had in that process is we had timing lock from the very beginning. So any updates we have were VFX side, but we didn't have massive conforms that we had to deal with the whole time.
Right.
And we weren't racing to temps. This movie was like our temps were these sessions. Essentially. So it's a very unconventional format that we went into this with. And I mean, if we wouldn't have had that timing lock, there is no way we would have finished.
Well, and we fed them so much. You know, I think that's the other thing too, is like, that's the other collaboration, is how collaborative, you know, Unbridled Sound and Parallax Post really is. Because we set up a whole library, because that's what we, on Swiss Army Man, there was one sound effect. I can't remember what it was called. What was that wind sound? It was the bane of your existence. Oh my God.
And it was like the first sound he wanted to put in this movie. And I was like, no.
Well, it got to the point to where he had a, Quan, I think, bought the rights to that sound.
Yeah.
Because he loved it so much. And we just couldn't recreate it exactly how we want it. And so we were like, all right, guys, you are not allowed to have any YouTube rips. You're not allowed to have any other sound effects that you don't know where it's coming from. Here is access to our library, and we will make sure that everything that you do, so you fall in love with, usable stuff. And so that was huge.
Now, there was one sound, though, that he had pulled that he loved, and it had more to do with the bagel presence, and we couldn't use it. It was from a video game called Inside, which... thanks to Quan, like this video game is beautiful.
I love that game.
The design is amazing. It's by this guy Martin Stig Anderson was the designer for it, and the ambiences in that game are incredible. So they were a big inspiration for some of like the calming, airy presence of the bagel before you see it, or even early on when we're not really pushing it much at all. And it was something that Quan was like, I love this, I need something like this in there. So I like using that as a template, I was able to kind of like, I use that as inspiration to create the nice bed that we had in there, and it really ended up working. But I mean, like, that was the one, like one of the big hurdles in that world where he's like, I love this sound and we need something pretty much just like it. So that was one thing that we were able to overcome. But like in Swissy with that sound, dude,
yeah,
I like, he would bring it up and we'd all be like, oh my God, again.
I know.
I really loved what you built for the bagel. I know in the beginning of the mix, I was tempted, you know, I wanted to have it play louder, of course, because there's so much texture and so many beautiful like layers of design in there. And now seeing it in theaters, I'm so glad it kind of ramps up throughout the film. And I think it's really nice because it gives you a feeling. It's almost subconscious at first.
Yeah.
And then you fully realize it later. Yeah. Which I think.
Right. Because it's like, it's something I realized too at first. Like, I was like, man, do we want to feel it more? And I even had like designed kind of a battle cry for it when we would see it, mm-hmm. which we ended up kind of like scaling back. It was just an idea we had tried, and Quam was all about it too. But like in the long run, it wasn't like, again, this isn't a movie about the bagel. So it's like, you've got like the way it naturally ended up flowing, and this is all due to Quan's insight on it. Like he knew the kind of rhythm and the feel he wanted, and it is more of this presence and feeling than it is about this huge textured thing and that's in your face. And that's, you know, that's something that I didn't, that didn't register with me immediately. And so like with some of their notes, it's not like, it's not always obvious, you know, like, and that's okay. But like, you just have to trust their direction, and you know, 9 times out of 10, their directions, like, they know.
It's so incredible to see it, like, to see, because even in the mix when we were getting these notes, I didn't understand the full scope of what they were adding up to until I saw the long play for the first time for our playback. And I was, and then I was like, oh, I see. Yeah. I see what's happening here. This is amazing.
Yeah, it's not, it's hard not to get just like hyper focused on these specific moments when you're editing, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a forest through the, for the trees situation.
Yeah. So I want to talk about one of my favorite scenes, actually, which is the fanny pack fight.
Oh,
oh my gosh, that scene was so fun.
That's Andrew right so there. Fun. That's like, that's his, his wife is obsessed with fanny packs. So it was like, this is my scene.
Yeah. This oh, yeah. As scene. Soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, let me cut this first. I just like, I have to cut this right away. And yeah, like Brent said, my wife, like, she's a fanny pack enthusiast. So
connoisseur.
So like, I literally pulled like, I picked 12 of her fanny
That's
packs.
That's right. He said 12.
she has more than that, but I picked 12 that I thought would help. And I recorded all of them. I recorded all their zippers, all their latches. I smacked all of them against couches, against my body, just to like get a different sense for like the different kinds of hits. Of course, we like had to sweeten them with other impacts, but this leads to like one of the best notes that that Shiner gave me, and it applied to a couple of scenes, but this one and for Deirdre falling down the steps. He's like, he watched through, we had it like all big, action packed and everything. He's like, this is great. Can we make it a little less badass? Like, he's like, I want people to remember that this is still a fanny pack. Just because he's pulled this ability from somewhere doesn't mean that it's still not the item that he's using. And it's like, oh, like it gave me a whole new perspective on intention, you know?
Right.
And,
I think the phrase is, instead of less is more, lame is more.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. He's like, I want it to feel a little lame. And it, like, it totally plays with like the influence. They really reference what Kung Fu Hustle
yeah.
was a big, big thing for that scene. Like, because each of the fight scenes kind of had to have their own vibe. And that, like, Kung Fu Hustle was definitely one of them. And I'm just like, this is so playful. So, like, a big part of it, too, was I have these winch straps that I recorded just to get, like, instead of just using your traditional whew and stuff, like, the swishes, we use these zips from these winch straps, like, for when he's twisting
oh, nice.
And swinging and everything. And those are the kind of things that ended up really cutting through and giving that sequence like its additional character. So yeah, man, I love that. And like the opening when he grabs it and he looks up into the air and he comes down, like that big swell, that like it works so well mm-hmm. with the music. And then like when he it first drops down, I had this recording of a crane, like a crane whooping, and I just like I stretched it a little bit and added some delay, and that's when it drops down and you see the little pig and everything. It's just it's a, like it's kind of a nod to Kung Fu there, and I really always love that accent. And I don't know, man, that scene, like once these scenes got going, they actually did fall into place pretty quickly. They just took a really long time to put together.
Well, one of the big things that I think that to throw a pitch to Julie were the fight team, those guys, what were their name, the name of the thing,
I can't remember. Arts crew, right?
Yeah. What, no, it's like Marshall Club, I think is what it is.
Yeah.
And those dudes are nuts. Well, Julie can talk about, like, we had to bring them in for recording for their voices to get it all in, because that added that whole layer of like just and then one of the best lines from that whole thing is was it Kevin f-
And then he gets hit in the face.
Yeah.
I still have all those recordings. It's like almost 5 minutes of just them literally doing flips in the recording room.
Oh my God.
And trying not to kick the mic, fighting with each other just to get some realistic, like, grunts and stuff. And then at the end, they would be like, oh, Kevin, fuck. And then, like, gets hit in the face and everything. And it's pretty great. Actually, I want to go through those sessions and, like, pick out fun stuff. Did they? We can make a whole new movie.
They ad-lib the Kevin part, or?
No, it's in there,
but it didn't get picked up on that actual, like, fight scene shoot. So we had to come in and do it. But, like, those dudes are great. I mean, anything that the Daniels asked them to do, they just did it. And they were in character. And it was just because they're brothers, too. So, like, they were playing off each other so well.
Yeah. And they were a huge thing for us as well of, like, knowing, like, oh, this is the style. Because they are such, like, you know, experts in these fights. They've really researched and know so much about Kung Fu and how these movies work and things like that, that they were huge. And so I think Andrew tore at the South By, like, popped up on him, and I think we were all just kind of like, oh, did we ruin this for them? Did we ruin it? They're like, yo, you sounded amazing. This was so, and we're like, okay, cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Like, I handed him like an analog camera that we had brought, and I was like, I'm going to get my picture with you guys. And they're like, with that? I'm like, yeah.
They're really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And their effort, I mean, like, anybody who's cut a fight scene, like, you can have all the hits and everything in the world, but, like, those efforts and grunts are what based, like, they ground it in reality, you know? So, like, all that ADR, again, like, it's invaluable.
Yeah. It was great. It was a lot of fun.
So, since Everything Everywhere All at Once is a family film, I'm going to have my daughter, Noelle, join us for a bit of the conversation. Actually, I just have to go get her off the bus, so I'll be right back. So, this is my daughter, Noelle.
Hi, Noelle.
Hi, Noelle.
Hello.
How was school?
Good.
So, do you like movies?
Mm-hmm.
Which movie? What movie would you say you identify the most with?
All the Star Wars stuff.
Oh, yeah?
That's our favorite.
Man, I like some Star Wars. If you had a lightsaber, what color would it be?
White.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Well, now it's your turn to ask the Everything Everywhere All at Once sound team a question.
This is the Noelle podcast now.
Yes.
You got any fun questions for us?
Evelyn becomes one with all her different versions in the multiverse. Can you talk about those montage sequences?
That was really fun. You didn't see it, but we actually go through and see a frame by frame of all of these different Evelyns in all these different verses and who and what she could be in every single one. There was like a prison Evelyn. There was like a beautiful animated Evelyn.
Animated, yeah.
Yeah, like, and it was all this. Oh. So that was a fun little side story. So the directors just reached out to all of their friends and gave one photo of Evelyn and was like, hey, everybody just make something and send it to us and we'll put it in. And so it was just like all the friends just putting things in and having it. And as for the sound, you know, what gets really weird is... All right, Noelle, if you hold your fingers in front of your face together, imagine that being one sound and then breaking it into other little tiny ones. Those are like the frames that we have.
Oh.
But it goes so fast because you get 24 of these in a second that it gets so blurred together that it just doesn't really do anything. So what we ended up finding out is like we had to pick our moments. And so... what really helped was a riser, which is just this big, like, building up thing that Andrew did. And then we took little frames, or what we call grains for granular stuff, took of her scream. So, like, we took, this is her scream. We took, like, just the ring finger of the scream. And then we started putting it around all over. It starts out in the front, and then it starts, like, going crazy as it goes out. To give you the feel of going through the multiverse.
And yeah, you know? And then there are little sounds that we would use to poke through around those screams. And it kind of translates to the sword at one point as well. Like, we got great direction from Shiner, like when they're in the forest and a Jobu like takes the sword, like she takes the branch and it flashes through all these items in her hand until she settles on the sword. And he's like, okay, like it's definitely like an indexing kind of sound. Like you're going through all these verses to find that right thing. He's like, I just want highlights. And so that directly applies to this sequence as well. And we didn't see that until like 2 or 3 days before the mix ended, right?
No, yeah, because we didn't have that.
And this is a good shout out to Sunlux, the composers, their score underneath that too, like because they used a lot of percussion instruments. It's just like you feel like like it's just this cacophony of everything coming together all at once.
And then Rafiq just shredding over that with his guitar,
yeah,
which I love as a metaphor for just like melting your face shredding. It was pretty great. Oh, Noelle, I see your confusion. Go look YouTube up guitar shred face melt and you will find gold. All right, so Noelle, in really quick, with your mouth, make the sound of breaking through different verses. Go.
I'm not sure how that would sound.
You know, that's a great sound.
That's a great sound.
We weren't sure either.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, you know, your mind breaks. And how do you describe your mind breaking? And that was a big challenge for us and the Daniels.
It's great when you have a visual cue, but like on a conceptual cue, like simply, I don't know, is sometimes the way you break right through. Because I think Brent asked me that really early on as well. And I was like, I just kind of I don't know.
Our clay pot was breaking, you know, because that's the thing they talk about in it is like, you know, being able to jump to different universes is like you just can't keep everything together. And so, you know, we just witnessed your clay pot break. So congratulations.
Meaning your brain.
Yes.
And that's such a great question because that for me is one of the moments of like all the creativity, everyone's contribution, like just shown all at the same time. It was like, and even when we first saw it, when we dropped that final sequence on the stage, had all the sound in there, everyone in there was like, whoa, like it was like we were all blown away by it. It was just like, that's crazy amazing, you know? It's awesome.
Yeah, and so on the stage, I mean, Alex, what was that like for you? You know, again, imagining that everything bagel of tracks, you know, like,
yes,
here you go.
It was, especially for the swords part, because there's important dialogue happening over that section too, and there's all this chaos, everything's changing. So it was really to poke out little tiny moments that you could and still understand what Jobu was saying. Yeah. And then also with all of the flashes, the edit looked crazy in that little section. It was it was like, so much, and it was such small events, you know, it was such fast and small events. So it really was just
yeah, like moments. you wouldn't know just watching, like there's a rubber chicken that passes through her hands, like a wrench and stuff. And I tried doing the frame by frame thing at first, but you quickly realize, which is common in sound editing, it's like, man, if you try and put everything that's appears on there, it's not gonna work. And that's indicative of the kind of direction that Shiner and Kwan are able to give. Like, they know, they understand. And like, you know, what we had in there was working, but when Shiner came over, he's like, so what I'm really thinking, and he gave me a little more specific direction. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's cool. And then it worked. So it's like, you really do have to trust people with a creative vision like that. Because no matter how creative you are, like, you can come up with some cool ideas, but like, to really understand how it will fit in, you need to follow their lead.
And then some quick fader moves to make sure just the little things poke through.
And what was that like mixing the scene in Atmos? Because you have all of those discrete channels. Did that actually help, or was it more of a hindrance?
Yes and no.
I mean, in Atmos, the great thing about having it is full frequency surrounds, really great pan. So you're really able to take advantage of those things. some of the problems that we found a little bit was, you know, we took the music stems and really pulled them apart and we're doing some cool stuff, but realizing the fold down didn't really happen well. And so we went back into a more traditional style mix with the music, which, because like nothing could be missing from the music. It was so like impertinent that this percussion came through this and this made, you know, these things happen for the rhythm and the timing. But
for the effects in those moments, like because it's so quick, the things are changing so quickly that I did put some stuff in Atmos, but you can't really register it because it's so quick. Atmos is really great for like slow things that are coming over you, right, or around you, which we did get to use in other parts of the film, especially when there's like camera zooms that are interesting. Mm-hmm. We try to use Atmos for those moments.
Or one of my favorites is during the hallway scene, yes, when all the lights are flickering. It's like ping pong sounds, like, mm-hmm, and stuff like that. That's what the universe sounds like, Noelle.
That in the hallway is when she's like, boom, and she just sends those waves down the hallway.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
in the theater, you can really feel those pass over and around you. And it's like, that was fun to cut, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, with all these sounds on top of it, you know, to get nerdy, if you play all frequencies at the same volume, you're basically getting like white noise. And so, and then one of the big messages from this is, how do we get past all the noise? And so it's now we're helping them decide which frequencies pull out for them to feel what they need to get past this noise.
And just utterly throughout the edit, trying to find places to breathe. Like naturally in the story, we have big breath moments, but seriously, like, and it goes right there with the sword and that big animation sequence, is like finding places for things to poke through, but also moments to just give a second of respite from all of this.
Yeah, the first, you know, like 15 minutes of this thing is just like, like you're getting through it. I think one of my favorite reviews I got from a friend right after the South By screening was, I love it, I feel pummeled.
And spotting it too, like Brent and I, we like our workflow to start off with, because it was pandemic, like we spotted on Zoom.
Yeah.
We used Frame.io to review scenes, like when we would finish a fight scene, we would pass it off to the Daniels and they could and watch it whenever they needed to. They could make notes and all that stuff. But like one of the first things Brent and I did before even our spotting, like we went through and we made a huge spreadsheet of scenes and we gave them priority levels. And one thing I had trouble with initially, I was like, okay, well, we got this fight scene, this fight scene, this fight scene. But then I'm like, well, wait a minute, like, the shield fight goes directly into the dog fight, goes directly into, you know, the three-person fight. Like, I was like, it's hard to define specific scenes in this movie. Like, it's not based on location, or it's just like, God, I mean, there's like a 45-minute period where it's just all blends together.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to it. It's like, you know, one of the questions we always get is, how did you define the different verses? And it's like, oh, we're not defining certain verses. We're defining how the verses break through. How do they intermingle? And how do we make these things feel like it's a breakdown?
Because we're pulling elements from those universes. We're not pulling the whole universe in.
Right.
So,
and one of the references we were using is a lot of like radio tuning and stuff like that. We were making radio tune whooshes. You'll hear, you know, Deirdre's voice come through and it'll sound very like lo-fi and come through with that kind of like analog distortion. And then I had the worry at first, like, hey, Noelle, when's the last time you listened to the radio? When you were scanning through the radio? You probably haven't
experienced
it's,
that.
It's never it's probably never been a thing, and that's okay.
Yeah, and so it was like, oh, well, I have this very notion of what it's like to go through and feel all these radio waves, which, as we knew, is different universes coming through into this little speaker. But now we have this generation that's, oh, it's a YouTube, it's a click. It's a click. It's a click. That's how
Spotify,
you get through is, you know, the generation, how they understand it is, we had to deal with what was given to us. Now the generation has more selection
of what's dealing with it. So, well, I'm getting philosophical about, you know, Jobu's object to choose and Evelyn's reaction to radio waves as a generational thing. But, you know, it definitely got into how do we make this feel a way that translates generational.
And the radio tuning became like a really great narrative tool for us. Like, one to add to the story, but it really assisted us in transitions between these weird spaces and moments.
Yeah.
Brent had developed all these like radio whooshes, and like Quan responded really positively to him. So like, we're like, oh, let's run with that. And I have a two-way radio. So I spent like a half of a day playing around with tuning this thing, like finding moments of almost someone talking and then just like riding that line, like between static and like the almost speaking, and then being able to manipulate it from there to create these transitions to and from. And the same goes for like the glass idea, which is, you know, like the clay pot, the leaking in. The glass is a very indicative of what's going on in Evelyn's mind. You know, it's really attached to her throughout. And like we were able to use those glass, these beautiful like high-pitched textures, and even with their residual kind of debris to like lead us in and out. And it was honestly because like it wasn't a crutch necessarily, but it was definitely something that we could lean on to like help color things up when we needed to. And it was something that like those were a couple elements that Quan and Shiner like made very clear at the very beginning that that's something that we needed to incorporate heavily throughout the movie.
Also, that's the radio frequencies, going back to the radio frequencies, something that we used in Atmos in conjunction with the voices that were just pulling us to a different space, into a different universe. And I thought that was a good usage of
Atmos,
of that. Yeah.
Yeah, that effect worked really well. I mean, when we're jumping to all these different universes, it never felt disjointed. I thought you guys did a really excellent job of bridging this multiverse with whatever space and time the characters were in.
Well, that's a big shout out to the directors and Paul Rogers and these things, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, people will come to us and be like, oh, you did such an amazing job doing these things. It's, well, they allowed us to, because they had the forethought to think about these things while making the script, while shooting this, while editing this. A lot of times we're approached to save things and, oh, you're an amazing sound designer, here's my movie, can you bring it to the next level? And you're like, I mean, I can, but I'm only as good as what you empower me with. And that's the thing about the Daniels with a lot of this stuff, is they made a story that empowered sound design for us to be able to do these things.
And they know what they want. And, you know, like, it's when they say no or something's not working from them, it's never coming from a malicious place. It's usually just like they have a vision, and they really have put all that thought into there. Like, we had a roadmap from them. It wasn't just like, we definitely came up with a lot of unique and interesting sounds to complement their ideas, but like, we had a terrific roadmap from them. And like, again, their guidance was like, this movie wouldn't be this movie without everything that they put into it, you know?
and the way it was picture edited, it was really really nice to highlight those moments with sound, because everything sort of flowed really well.
Right, and that was a big language. Paul Rogers is amazing, and we're amazing, but Dan Kwan from a post standpoint is an amazing editor and an amazing sound designer. And so, you know, the rhythm that was there already set for us was great. And then the Sun Lux guys, the rhythm they made for us, you know, really put it. So it was great, because we were able to just shine instead of have to rework. I think is what really helped us. It wasn't like, oh, I need to rework this scene because it's not working. It's working. How do we make it next level?
Yeah. And that, like, that for me, like, that whole concept is, it's intimidating. Like, those guys are the smartest guys in the room, like in most rooms that they're in. And I'm not saying that just to like prop them up. They're very brilliant people. And so, like, you come and you see how much work they put in, you're like, man, I have, like, not only do I want to impress everybody, like, I want to make this better than what they've brought to us. So, like, yeah, it was a constant challenge in that regard, but not, like, not a burden.
Right, because they're the sweetest people. They're the smartest people and the sweetest people in the room, and they're really, you know, everybody has their communication problems at times, but rarely do we have it with these guys. You know, they're able to communicate, like Andrew says, and tell us what they want, what they don't like, even with the, you know, lame is more, you know what I mean? And it's just...
They say it in a very sweet way. Too. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I guess I can't argue with that.
Yeah. And it's never an ego thing. And it's, you know, they're very empowering to the crew. I mean, did you see they had the, after all the like contractual titles at the end of people, the first thing to roll were the production assistants. Like, that's so rad.
Yeah.
You know? Sorry, I'm getting emotional.
No, it's really great when the filmmakers appreciate their crew like that. So before we move on with this conversation, I'm actually going to say goodbye to Noelle, and then we will come back and talk about hot dog hands.
Oh, yeah. Hot dog hands.
What do you mean, these guys?
Yeah.
You have a pair of hot dog hands. Wow. Okay, so we're going to say goodbye to Noelle.
Bye, Noelle.
Bye, Noelle.
Yes. Noelle was amazing.
Bye. Bye.
All right. Hot dog hands. So... Ew.
First off,
dude, my mom, when I asked my parents what their favorite parts of the movie was, my dad's like, all the rocks, and then like the kung fu scenes. And my mom's like, I loved the movie, but the hot dog hands made me so uncomfortable. So, and I was like, you know what? I pinned that for you.
Well, at least it was, she said hot dog hands and not the other adult thing.
Yeah. Way worse.
Mom, don't listen to this.
Well, my mom saw Swiss Army Man and the penis compass was up. If you can't tell by my voice, I'm not from California. I'm from Kentucky. And my mom was like, I just thought there was a squirrel in his pants. It's the most like Kenneth from 30 Rock moment.
Oh my God.
So she's like, I'm going to go see your movie. I'm like, no, you're not allowed to, but I'll take my son.
A coworker told me, he said, it was my birthday. So my daughters took me to see Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I said, oh, that's so great. It's such a great family movie. Oh, my next text was, except for some of the props.
Yeah.
Also, how old are your daughters?
Yeah, exactly. Well, also, side note, I think those hot dog hands that Andrew held up are going to be on the A24
merch. They are.
Oh, they're already on the merch.
Yeah, I think they are.
They're on the merch site, so you can buy some.
Yeah, that's a hard pass for me. Sorry, man.
She's no. Yeah, I'm with Julie's mom. They're uncomfortable.
This is what you need to take to Noelle's like track events and shake them around. Like,
go the Noelle. New spirit foam fingers.
Yeah, exactly.
Jamie Lee Curtis has been wearing them at a lot of her like presentations at theaters and stuff, which I love. The whole cast too, man. Like, I just have to say, and like seeing these screenings, like, they're behind this 100%. Not only are their performances amazing, but like to see how enthusiastic they've been in public about it, and it's not for show. Like, they are just they're just like so into it. It's awesome. Yeah.
I feel like everyone else who I've met, like after the film has come out, has the same feeling that we all have. Yeah. Everybody loves it. Everybody put all of their love forward into it.
And I think that's just, this is an important movie.
Yeah.
As like, I don't feel comfortable saying that about anything I work on, but I'm like, this is a important film, like with
representation,
with generational trauma, with these things. As a parent, I felt really weird in it because I'm like, I'm with Joy being like, yo, my parents want to be a minister, and I definitely did not do that. I went to art school, like, oh, my parents. And then I'm like, as a dad, I'm like, well, yeah, my son needs to like straighten up a little bit. Like, what's going on? And then I'm like, oh God, I've turned into Evelyn. And then it's like,
also,
you know.
One thing for me that has really stuck out in this, just, over the last 2 years, one, like the unintentional foresight they had when they wrote this, like for when it came out, I'm specifically thinking about Wayman's moment of like, it's like his plea to humanity. Like,
mm-hmm.
why can't we be kind, especially when we don't know what's going on? And I like that really, really resonated with me because like of just witnessing the way we've watched humanity treat each other over the last couple of years, specifically when we've all been lost or locked at home or whatever, like, it gets me every time. And like that, there's a lot of value in that. And I think people need to be reminded, because everybody's kind of lost their minds a little bit. And I, you know, like, that's one thing that sticks with me. Like, I, like, yeah, the undiagnosed ADHD, the generational trauma, like, these are big themes and very important topics that have resonated with people. But that moment, it sounds to me like he's reaching out of the screen and just trying to smack us all in the face and be like, God,
with his hot dog hands.
It's like, you're killing me here. Like, be kind. And
right.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I just had to say that.
The feeling, I have that feeling too when Evelyn stops and says, I'm learning to fight like you. I think about that in my daily life now. Like, how, okay, I'm presented with a challenge. How can I fight this with love?
Yeah.
And kindness.
Yeah.
And hot dog hands.
But I think now, the original question was about hot dog hands. I know. Sorry, guys.
Well, and now we're just speaking as fans. We're not even speaking as people who worked on this thing.
We're like, we worked on this? What?
It's still very surreal. I think we were talking about that the other day. We're like, wait, what?
Well, it's all, I mean, I speak for myself, but I feel like I speak for a lot of us. Like, we're all just like, so do we just retire until Daniel's next film? Like,
I wish that was an option.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
What went into the sound of those hot dog hands?
Yeah, we never answered
that question. Do you want me to list them out?
Yeah.
Yeah, list them out.
Yes.
Everybody needs to know.
Well, all right. Like, I'll throw out. I'll
don't throw out the don't throw out the special one. Throw out all the other ones.
Okay. So on our end, I was just like, I want to take this. Like, I don't want to leave this to Foley. So, and I mean, we did get some Foley support in there, but I took leeks and, like, just, you know, like the long ends of leeks, smacking those around a little bit, twisting them for a bit of that rubbery kind of thing. My wife, again, like, went to her closet and just, she has
Molly a bunch of
a lot of those tiny thin belts. She had, like, so I took like 9 of them, like a cat of nine's tail, and like was like whipping those around and everything. I drummed my fingers all over my belly to get that kind of skin contact, like, and comping all these things together just kind of played out. It worked. And I think I used a couple other vegetables in there. So, like, it all worked to, like, make it really real. But, like, there were a couple of moments where, you know, so like,
they're
they
really
play
veggie dogs.
Yeah.
They're vegan.
They're vegan.
Yeah, yeah. And but they're also, like, there are a couple moments where there's humor. I mean, they're really funny anyway. But, like, there are, like, when we first, like, see her, you know, miss jump, and she, like, her hands flop,
and the
cuffs fall off. You hear, like, so Paul Rogers and the Daniels, like, throughout their temp, they had, like, found this, like, cat food, like a finger in a cat food can thing. And it adds that wetness to it that is just like, and Daniel Shiner would be like, we can't lose that. We get laughs every single time we get that flop. And we're like, cool. So we made sure to keep that in there throughout, like, it at, like, all the realistic, like, true visceral stuff that we came up with totally plays, totally works. But, like, that little element of theirs that, like, continues the humor on is just, like, I mean, again, it's them really knowing what they want out of things. And, you know, we elevated it and we just kept their cherry on the sundae.
Yeah, the cat food cherry.
And it worked. It worked really well. It's like, I'm trying to explain to my parents, like, what are you working on again? I was like, okay, so how do you think hands made out of hot dogs would sound like?
By the way, his dad's a doctor, too. So he probably literally was like, well, actually, if you take out the bones and the metatarsals, this is what would happen.
I can hear his eye roll through the phone. He's like, what do you do for a living?
So we go into some really fun universes in this film. Did you guys have a favorite one? There was, like, the rocks. There was the pinatas. There was crowns and paper.
Oh, the rocks was a nice mix moment.
Yeah, it was.
The rocks is great. My favorite is the Raccoonie multiverse, especially since I got to, like, be in the tracking session with Randy Newman, and that was definitely a childhood moment for me.
That's so awesome.
And also he was great, and
yeah,
editing in him as Raccoonie was so cool.
Oh no.
He also sounds very close to him.
Yeah. We love Raccoonie.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
Don't forget me. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's also funny, I also still have a ton of like extras from that session, and it ended up I handed a lot of stuff over to the Sun Lux boys, because in the soundtrack they used a lot of the dialogue and like a lot of those recordings to add to the songs and into everything. And like the Sucked Into a Bagel, that's Stephanie Hsu as Jo Bujoy. All she did was just like randomly, she was just singing in the ADR session, and it ended up in the soundtrack and in the movie and everything, and it's amazing. It's so good.
So you had a very serious session recording Raccoonie singing. How did you concentrate?
Right? Well, it's all a blur now, but I don't know. Randy Newman just like got in. He was like, so I'm just a singing raccoon. And I think he was expecting it to be animation, but it's not. It's an animatronic sitting on Harry Shum Jr.'s head. And both Daniels were trying to explain it in such this like their goofy way, but also like so that he'll understand it. And like once we started like getting the flow, and Ryan Lott from Sun Lux was also in the session with us, he just kept knocking out takes. And then we were just like, hey, can you just say a bunch of random stuff, like you're a raccoon that got picked up by animal control. And again, he's just riffing off all these things, and you know, he was laughing about it, we were laughing about it, and I think once he got comfortable, it just made the rest of the session like flow, and it was a lot of fun. And to answer your question about concentrating, I didn't.
We were getting videos like a little snake. She's like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, I posted one on Instagram when I got permission from the Daniels, and it's great. He's incredible.
I wouldn't have been able to hold it together, that's for sure.
No,
not me either.
No. Oh man, so those are my favorites.
Alex, what about you?
Probably the rocks.
The rock scene was it's an interesting thing to talk about mix wise because it's so understated on mm-hmm. on purpose. Originally Andrew gave me tons of wind tracks. We had it all around us. We had a big like vortex almost sound.
Yeah. Atmos.
Yeah, it was kind of like a big atmospheric moment, and then slowly we sort of boiled it down, and I worked with Daniel Scheiner on that, and he was like really specific, wanted us to be able to sort of trail and trace like one wind that comes in from the left, and then another one sort of drifts in after that, and it all sort of, you know, overlapped with each other, and it was very calming and very quiet. Everything was just turn it down, this is a moment to breathe and really take a moment to like meditate. I think we all needed like mm-hmm. that moment of meditation to take on or to take in everything that we had just you know, seen and heard in the film. And then there was like the distant wind chime that was a nice yeah. touch, and it was also very light. Everything is very, very subtle in that scene, and I think yeah.
And got very, a nice break. Very immersive too. Like there is a lot there for like the simplicity of it all, and I love the way that scene came out as well.
And what about you, Andrew? Did you have a favorite universe?
It bounces around. I think I told Alex right after the South by premiere, I was like, man, like rewatching again, like. I find myself constantly being like, ooh, this part's coming up. Ooh, mm-hmm. this part's coming up. I love this. I would have to say, though, like that moment of Evelyn starting to fight like him and working her way up the stairs all the way through to her big culmination with Jobu is like, one, I love the way all the design plays. The music's great. But like even just where we are in the movie, like the positivity of it all and like seeing that effect on the people she goes up against, like it's violent, but it's not. And she's like, these people are going through these transformations thanks to her help. And I love everything from like the moment the perfume shows up in his hands yeah. from the grenade, and like we have those little Tweety birds, like almost a nod to cartoons right there, like he's in bliss, and like the chiropractic moment, like those are really, really fun sound moments, even though they're not like these highly conceptual things, and there's a rhythm to it all. And then like at the end when it's just like all built up and her foot goes down and you hear that crunch of the rock, and she's like just affirming herself as her mother. Like, I like that, that just like, it fills me with joy. That whole sequence is really rad.
But it's also cool because like, it's, you like also see her, well, you see her, like, she has mastered the verse jumping because she's jumping in and out during that entire to get everything. And I think that was also,
it's choreographed beautifully. Yeah. The way, oh, yeah, the way it's edited, another nod to Paul, like, you know, it's badass.
And the visual effects scene, like the whole thing.
Yeah. What's your favorite?
So, all right, I'm struggling because I have two. I have one that's very beautiful and simple. I love Hong Kong streets rain sequence. Feeling that rain all around in the city, and just, you know, we were giving the Grand Master and like a lot of Wong Kar Wai stuff is like inspiration, and, you know, definitely like in the mood for love. And it was just like, oh, this beautiful moment. That being said, my favorite moment might be when Evelyn's a dominatrix. And so, but no, I mean, like, yeah, that's a joke, but also seriously, because, you know, Daniel Scheiner, one of the directors, is,
that's his cameo.
Yeah, is the sub. But one of the most amazing moments to me is there's this one song that we all know from the 90s, maybe 2000s. I don't remember the exact drop date, but Story of a Girl, which is this amazing song. And they reached out to the original artist and he did different renditions for different verses.
Like so, custom made. Yeah, yeah.
And so like when Evelyn's cleaning and you hear the song coming through like the little like dungeon, it's not Story of a Girl, it's a Story of a Sub. And like all these,
it's like
things.
It's like that. What is the safe word? Is yes or yeah, something yeah, yeah. like that?
No, smile. My safe word smile. Is smile. Safe
smile. Yeah, yeah.
So it's just like little details. Like that's the one. Like I wish those versions would have come out on the soundtrack, but didn't. Because like when they're in the Winnebago, like talking about divorce and all this stuff, when she's fighting with Deirdre, he was like, do the Garth Brooks version of your song. It's just, oh, there's, it's just,
and every time we would go through one of those moments when we were on the mix, like we all are cracking up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just like, you're like, I cannot believe you guys managed to get this.
And also, and like, how wholesome is that spank at the end? Like so inspiring. And like, you're in this really like perverted moment, but you're like, yes, you know, I just love that so much.
And he's got that drool coming out of his mouth. It's like, oh my god, dude, it's creepy but wonderful.
And also Michelle Yeoh for being like, yeah, yeah, I'll spank you, like, let's go.
I know, like, she's amazing.
You've had this coming.
Yeah, yeah.
And he loved it. It made him so happy.
Yeah.
That you was know, the
who
point.
Are we to take away his pleasure by shame, like kink shaming him?
No kink shaming allowed.
When you first see him in that role too, when you're in the office and like he walks out and he's like, yeah, clean up in there. And she yanks on that thing and he's like, oh, like that little groan that he does just kills me every time.
Oh, Shannert's the best.
All right. What else you got for us?
So I know we kind of touched on the bagel, but I wanted to go back to the bagel and ask you guys, like, okay, so yeah, what went into the bagel? Hold on
real quick. Are you a bagel or a bagel kind of person?
I'm somewhere kind of in between, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a bagel.
It's a bagel. But I mean, I say it and it's not Jersey enough for the people that I, you know, I live in Jersey now, so it's not enough for them. So that everything... Now I can't say, because now
there's no judgment here. We take both kinds, bagels and bagels.
Okay. Yeah. So what went into the everything bagel?
Okay.
Nice.
Salt.
So originally, this was one of the things that we were able to get a glimpse at early on. And it was so funny. Brent's like, okay, I need you to take a crack at building this thing. It's an everything bagel made of everything in every universe. And I was like, what the
fuck? You know,
like, right. And they sent over the still. So it was the white room and everything. And it was just like a bagel, like literally, or no, it was like a black circle.
It was just a black circle. Just there was no floating details there. Or anything.
And I was like, okay. So I And this kind of relates to the fanny pack. Like, I really like, in my process, I like to see how much I can get out of the actual thing before I start branching out. That's why I went directly with fanny packs. It's like, well, you know, let's try this and see where we can go. And it just happened to work. With the bagel, I was like, all right, I went to my toaster oven and I threw a bagel in there and I took a really high def mic and I started recording a knife on there and putting bread or putting butter on there, putting cream cheese and stuff. And like, I got all those crackly elements from that, really, like actual toasting, which helped. And then it's like, okay, they had talked about rhythm, this thing, I imagined it spinning. So then I branched out to more like rhythmic things. I recorded a rowing machine, a salad spinner, and all these things that I could manipulate to try and like give it a sense of movement. And then I just started going nuts with like baby cries and birds. And one thing that I did early on, and I think Brent was the only one who ended up hearing it, is I threw in what's DJ Snake going, "Turn down for what?" Yeah. Like, it just had that in there. Yeah, and I threw it into Brent, and I was like, "You don't have to share that with them," but I just could not help
you
it.
You should have. Like, oh,
I
man.
Had to put it in there. And it was like delayed out and everything, but like that initially, it wasn't about the presence at that point. It was actually just what this is, and a lot of that was still in there when Alex got to it. You know, like they're like, again, like when we're really closed up on that thing, like it's not about like being consumed by the bagel. So
the bagel's, you know, like a state of mind. It's not a thing.
Indeed.
There's a ton, like there's a lot to that thing, and you may not know it just watching the movie, but like there's a lot of thought put into it, like, you know, a lot of direction from them, and we just kind of threw everything in the kitchen sink at it, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it totally comes across like there's everything in that bagel, man. It's
an everything bagel. Actually, Bell's Bagel, this really great bagel place in Highland Park, actually made an all black, like charcoal,
everything
sesame,
bagel.
Yeah. And that for this movie, because the Daniels are so, big in the Highland Park community and all of this stuff. So they were really showing. So yeah, Google that, Bell's Bagel, everything, everywhere all at once, and you'll see like the black bagel.
Also eat there. It's amazing.
Oh yeah, their bagels are really good too. Yeah.
Even though we've toned down the bagel, I still do feel like it's like all everything's elements. In there, and you can feel it moving and swirling, and you can feel it sort of inviting you in.
I'm actually really interested to hear this thing in headphones. I haven't watched a headphone mix
yet. Yeah, me too, actually. So. Yeah, I wasn't trying to certainly not downplaying what we ended up with.
Yeah.
And it like there was a lot of thought that went into that thing without a doubt. And I know like Alex, like she had not a lot of time to work with it. And she like, again, like I love the escalation that came from that. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, and it's so effective.
Yeah. By the end of the movie, it's sucking joy in.
Yes. Yeah. That is also a metaphor. No, yeah.
So I just have one final question for you guys. You know, every project that you work on is an opportunity to grow at your craft. And so how has working on the sound of Everything Everywhere All at Once helped you to grow at your craft?
Alex grew us all. Alex is the reason we are all better at what we do on this project.
I don't see how that's...
She says that, but I can attest I'm a better mixer because of it. We're all better at communicating because of it, because bringing somebody else in and being like, oh, right, I have to explain why I did something instead of whatnot. But literally, I'll tell you this story right real quick. I had a mental breakdown day three of like, I was fucking everything up. I was like, fuck, I'm fucking it all up. The consonants are very sharp. The Mandarin, the Cantonese are very sharp language. I'm fucking it up. And like, I call Andrew, I'm freaking out at night. And I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? What do I do? And he's like, you'll be fine, bro. You'll be fine. And I'm like, no.
Well, you were definitely worried about, you're like, I think it's all playing way too quiet. I'm like, dude, I think you're over.
Yeah. And then I come in and really? Like, you know, it's hard when you have a new mixer or new somebody on the project, you know, it's machismo. I gotta come in like, hey, I know what I'm doing, I'm the sound supervisor. And I just kind of was like, fuck, Alex, I don't know what I'm doing on this, can you please help me out? And she's like, oh yeah, just drop this and do this.
Oh my God, it's amazing. thank you so much.
I think for me personally, it's a real lesson in troubleshooting, like not panicking or like letting your stress overcome you. Cause like, there's no doubt about it. This was a tremendous undertaking, especially for how small of our crew was. But, and you know, like I care about hitting deadlines and I care about, you know, giving our clients what they want and feeling like they're getting what they need out of us. And so it was more about like not letting the stress or everything slow me down and just get into problem solving mode and being like, okay, well, what do we do to do this? Like to get to this point and do it efficiently. And I think over the course of that small amount of time, like it was more about like, okay, just breathe and okay. Yeah, so we can do this, we can do this. And a lot of conversations, like Brent said, we've been working together for a very long time. But like, I mean, we talked every single day, if not a couple of times a day, like when I'm working from my home studio. And like, and that helped, like just knowing that I'm not alone and we're in it together, all of us, you know, like that's what I took away. And I would love to continue to work that way. Like it's the camaraderie of it all is really fantastic.
This was a family. Yeah. I think really, you know, cause it was, the directors are so crew focused. We never felt like we were the hired help. We felt like we were just making movies with our friends in the backyard. So it was summer camp vibes and yeah. It was amazing.
It was amazing. Thank you for letting me join the family.
Hell yeah. Thank you for saving us.
You can't leave us ever.
Yeah, you're stuck.
You're stuck.
But also one of the big things tech-wise that we found too was Undertone. That plugin, I think, really helped us on dialogue. It helped. You did some weird shit with it too, didn't you, Andrew?
I've been using it quite a bit. I mean, maybe I used it a little bit on this. I used Envy from Cargo Cult quite a bit, especially for some of the bagel stuff. But yeah, I mean, Undertone's a fantastic plugin.
Just because we want to give them a shout out. So if they ever want to like sponsor us or send us free cool stuff, same thing with Cargo Cult, man.
Julie and Alex, how did this project help you to grow your craft?
For me, it was a great joy for me to sit in effects because I do mix mostly dialogue and music, and I have come from effects background. So I was so excited to mix effects, especially on a film like this with so much amazing effects, and then also designed by Andrew, which he just gave me the world. I think that what I grew the most in was like just becoming completely transparent in the mix chair of being like sort of a medium for the Daniels and for this family so that we all could collaborate. And I just sort of, it was a nice experience to sort of let go and trust the collaboration and the process. And I think that that's probably the most.
I mean, you didn't miss a beat. I mean, we would have never, you know, it was great how it worked. It was no, like I said, there was no egos. There was no anything. You just came in. I mean, to tell on myself again, I think the only problem was she'd be like, where is this and why are you doing it like this? I'm like, I'm sorry. No, she didn't. She didn't say
but
that
But if you
at
did,
all.
It was fine.
Right. Because the thing is she came in and jumped into a template that wasn't hers. She had no clue the layout. I mean, like, she rode a bike uphill with the wind against her backwards and did it so gracefully.
Yeah, because there's nothing you can, like, we could give her all the verbal, like, and this is what's going on, this is what's going on, but until she could just sit down and deal, like, I don't know how much we ever could have really prepared her until she just dove in. And yeah, like Brent said, man, did not skip a beat.
Thank you. It was really, really amazing work. Also, your team gave me, like, hope in the future of our business, really, because it's so... Yeah. Sometimes there is a lot of ego involved and a lot of a lot of stuff goes on in the mix stage that's you know, a little bit hard to decode. But with us, everything was just out and on the table. We all shared our authentic opinions and then responded to them.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I first reached out to Alex, you know, she gut punched me real quick because she goes, "Are you just hiring me because I'm a female and you need a female?" No, and I'm like, no. I mean, it didn't even like
cross my mind at first. I was like, no, you're a badass and do like the boys and stuff. So I just figured it would be a good mix.
Sorry. And,
well, no.
But no, it's but, no, but that's, but, say that anyway. Alex would say, you're only hiring me because I'm a woman. Yes. She schooled me on that.
Right,
right. So.
That's right, I did.
And so, sorry. But no, but I think that's thing. The kind of like, you know, honest, like get it out there confrontation that made it to where we can know where we stand. And I didn't like buck back and be like anything weird. It's like, well, no, but also, yeah, let's get that message out more. Like, I don't.
The industry needs more of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not. You know, we need equal opportunity. And that's what Julie does great in all of this stuff is like, yeah, she's a woman of color and these things, but you know what? She does a damn good job. So she's an amazing, she's an amazing ADR supervisor that also happens to be a woman of color.
Exactly.
And they're going to help keep us white boys in check.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess to piggyback off that, the way that I kind of grew in my craft, like I've been ADR souping for Brent for the last couple years and I have a, you know, grander trajectory for my career. But I mean, this movie kind of just like, helped me learn a lot of the collaboration process a lot more and like got me more comfortable in these rooms with these incredible actors that and the Daniels that, you know, came in and knocked everything out. And then I sat with the Daniels to edit it all in, pick the right takes and like get weird with it. So, I mean, I'm really thankful for this process because I don't think without it, I'd be as comfortable in these rooms. And also Brent just allowing me to just like take it and go. He's like, I trust you. Go do it. Get the best shit that we need. And the boys were happy. And at the end of the day, it was all I could ask for.
Yeah, because it's a team. It's not me up here being like, I'm so great. I'm the sound. I'm like, I'm literally just the liaison that makes great things happen with great people. And I'm so blessed that I have great people that I can help empower to do their amazing jobs. So that's what a supervisor should be. And I'm just thankful that I've been surrounded by great people, clients and team.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for having this conversation with me about The Sound of Everything Everywhere All at Once. I really appreciate
it.
Thank you.
A big thanks to Brent Kaiser, Julie Diaz, Andrew Twite, Alex Furman, and to Jennifer Walden for the interview. Looking for more audio-related podcasts to listen to? We're part of the Audio Podcast Alliance, featuring a hand-picked selection of the very best podcasts about sound. Be sure to hear the latest episodes from our friends in the community at audiopodcast.org. That's it for this episode. Thanks a lot for listening, and see you next time. Take care.